Grab your pitchfork, light your torch, and get ready for inciting a riot. Conventional thinking has been warned, because we're going to gather, and we're going to march, and we're going to blow its f***ing house down.
Hello, rioters, and welcome back to Inciting a Riot, the podcast. I would be your left-wing, dirt-worshipping host, Firelight. Today, episode 139, Inciting S.J. Tucker's Riot, talking to pagan musician and icon S.J. Tucker has been a dream of mine for many, many years, and the stars aligned recently so that we could sit down for a bit of a chat. We talk pagan artistry and the pagan landscape and just all sorts of really, really cool topics that I am just so blessed and excited to share with you today. Quick note, I'm not going to plug Patreon today, though I do want to say I appreciate those of you that are continuing to support the show and support independent pagan media. I know that right now with the spread of COVID-19, also known as coronavirus, a lot of folks are feeling pretty financially uncertain and just generally fearful. So I'm not going to take the time right now to promote giving me money. So I do just want to say, if you guys are out there and you are feeling scared, if you have a GoFundMe, if you have a need of any kind, you can always, of course, email me, firelight@incitingariot.com. I'll be happy to try to get the word out for you, for your cause, for your event, for your GoFundMe. I just want you guys out there being safe and healthy and happy so that when all of this is over, there are more of us to return back to regular life. But I hope this is a fun little respite for you. But without any further ado, here is my interview with the one and only S.J. Tucker.
Well, S.J. Tucker, thank you so much for taking some of the time to be here with me today. I'm so grateful. I know that there's a lot of constraints on your time lately. Elizabeth Warren being being one of them, but not chief amongst them. So I appreciate you finding and squeezing me in for a little chat here.
Well, Firelight, it is an honor and a privilege. Thank you.
Oh my gosh. Oh gosh. Well, thank you for saying that. That's too kind. I was, of course, listening to your music to prep for today.
Hooray.
Because I was just trying to get
fell down on the job. You did a better job than I did there. I did not review a damn thing. So
well done. I was just trying to think what was, the first S.J. Tucker song that I really heard, and I started going back and back and back and realizing how far back these albums of yours go and how long you have been out there being S.J. Tucker. So let's dive in here and talk about I know that a little bit about what the internet says your history is, but tell us, how did you go from from just a skinny white chick to the S.J. Tucker we know and adore today?
What a wonderful question, and what a fun way to phrase it. For anyone who does not know, skinny white was in the early days, and it happened by accident. It was not the band name that we signed on with when we had our very, very first show. It was the three piece that I had when I was 19 to begin with, and then later on continued to use it because I decided that I was mystified by all the performers who had something like a 19-piece band on the road and then went by so-and-so McGillicuddy or whatever. And I thought, that's not cool to your side players. That's not cool to your buddies. So we continued to use the band name for quite a long while, but it was not the band name that we told the organizers of our first gig that we had. But they saw this bumper sticker on my guitar case, which I had gotten from, I'm sorry, I'm out of breath. I was running over to my office so that we could chat in here undisturbed. And it's a fun walk, but it took it out of me today. So just continuing to breathe. I recommend breathing to anyone listening.
drink your water, breathe some air, get some sun. We're all plants.
Do all those things. They're vital. We won't ship around later on. So our name was actually Headcase, but that's a different story that I will not go down the rabbit hole of. But the organizer saw the sticker on my case and assumed that was our name. And the sticker was one that I had gotten from a slam poet in Hot Springs, Arkansas, which is where I played my first concerts as a teenager at a place that is no longer there called the Poets Loft. And this was way before we had the wealth of social media self-promotion options that we do today. This was 1999, many, many, many lifetimes ago for not just me. For
oh, God, is 1999 many lifetimes ago?
Depending on, well, I'm sure that my little boy would say so because he's only been on the earth for 16 months. But there we were. It's the blazing hot middle of June. And I wasn't going to argue, but they had already printed up the posters with a different band name, that band name being Skinny White Chick. And what the bumper sticker said was, if you are not a skinny white girl, you are nothing. And that was a whole bit of social commentary in true slam poet style on Hollywood, on the way that society tends to work as far as attractive people are concerned in our Western ideals of what beauty is supposed to be like. And I put it on my case because people would see my little skinny ass walking down the street with my giant, giant guitar case and point and laugh in those days. And I was like, well, okay, I'm going to turn this around just for me. And the guys who were putting the gig together saw that. It was a little outdoor music festival in the blazing heat. And we were 19, so we didn't care how hot it was. And they said, well, we thought that was your band name. And it was truth in advertising, so we kept it. And these days, I do not use the band name. I still have some of my online presence represented by it. But as it is no longer truth in advertising, because I am now curvy white lady, newly rocking my version of the mom bod.
And I was going to say curvy white.
All
mom.
The mom bods out there, curvy white, perhaps curvy white milf. I will leave that up to others to decide.
That could be your next album name.
Yeah. I'll get a bunch of dance mixes going, and that'll be my Lizzo tribute out of nowhere that no one's expecting. I wonder what she would think of that. Hopefully it would give her a smile.
Knowing how supportive she is of independent artists, I'm sure she would probably find it, adore it, and then like ping you and say, hey, can I add a track to it? Can I drop a verse on it? She seems to be pretty awesome.
That is the kind of thing that I live for too. I would so much rather collaborate with people than be in competition. And that's made life
plenty of room for everyone. You know, I used to say things like that and not actually believe it. I used to think that, really there was only room for like a couple people to make it, you know, like in any one thing, you know, and oh gosh, you know, there's really only room for so many pop stars, or there's really only room for so many, you know, pagan podcasts. There's really only room for so many, whatever. And, you know, the crazy thing is, especially with the advent of social media, you start realizing how so wrong that is. There's a lot of room
completely
for everyone. I mean, there's a lot of people on the planet, and there aren't that many people trying to like make a go of their passions, at least not statistically. And so if you want to make a go for your thing, do it. I mean, there's room for you, because, you know, what I love is like, I mean, what I love and what makes me really sad and reminds me that I am getting very old and 1999 was many, many lifetimes ago. But, you know, like randomly seeing a story about things like, oh, here's the top 20 TikTok users or something.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're looking at these 13 to 16 year olds that pulled in $1.5 million in TikTok money last year or something like that. And you're like, I've never heard of these people. I have no idea who they are. They don't affect my life in any way. But you know what? There was room for them in a new weird thing that, like, sure, a whole generation makes fun of, but like they're making money and they're doing a thing and it makes people happy and awesome for them. And, You know, what I love about what you do is, and have always done, is that you're not waiting for somebody else's permission. You don't wait for like a record company's permission to put your music out there. You know, you've always just been like, you know what, I have work and I think it's good. And I think I'm going to just, you know, stick my name on it and throw it out there and see what happens.
Thank you.
And you, I mean, my God, you've become S.J. Tucker. I mean, you, when I think of pagan music, I mean, just those two words, when I think of pagan music, there are just a handful of names that I can think of. And I think how crazy that is, because there's so much room and so few people trying to like occupy that space. It's crazy. So, I mean, I think, you know, of course there's Wendy Rule and Kellyanna and S.J. Tucker. And I just, you know, like you three were it for me from the beginning.
Oh, that's wonderful though, because we're all buddies.
I know.
All three of the ladies that you just mentioned. And it is such a teeny tiny little scene. I think a long time ago I read in the Indie Bible, if I'm remembering correctly, in whatever edition it was, Indie Bible at the time, because I was bound and determined when I was a young songwriter just out of college living in Memphis, trying to figure out what my path was going to look like spiritually, it turns out, and musically and professionally all at the same time. That all happened at once. Early 20s were very exciting. I read in that edition of the Indie Bible, don't try to be big in LA, try to be big in Dubuque, for example. That thing, I don't remember quite exactly what the quote was, but that's sort of how the witchy music scene is. And fortunately, the side effect of that is that it lets us all be on really, really wonderful, lovey-dovey, adoring terms with each other instead of being a bunch of drama monkeys and having all sorts of animosity. There's as far as I know, and I don't really want to know if I'm wrong, there's hardly any animosity between any of us, which is why you get shared projects like the Green Album and this thing that started at PSG a few years ago that's now a permanent part of the Pagan Spirit Gathering schedule, whether anybody wants it there or not. But clearly people want it because it keeps happening, called Bardapalooza. And it was the what we call the Year of the Flood, where a whole bunch of us were scheduled there to perform, as is typical for any year of Pagan Spirit Gathering. You got tons of pagan performers all coming together, known and unknown, from near and far, from the States and from abroad. But because the whole event got flooded out before the middle of the week, all of our shows were obliterated, and so we had no opportunity to sing for our community unless we took it. So we all sort of took matters into our own hands with the blessing of staff, and had a massive jam session that Tuesday night before everyone had to get off site and try to get home and wash all the mud out of their stuff. And you couldn't have that if you didn't have so much love and admiration between the people who share the scene. And I feel really, really kind of sorry for folks that have to tour with and record with and work with strangers and people that they don't know. And if you're good at that, more power to you. I feel so cherished and so spoiled because of how tight all of us in the witchy world music scene are. And with so many of the authors and speakers as well, we all try to hang out and we all try to interface. And I'm not saying that I'm friends with absolutely everybody, but I like to take the opportunity to see where someone's at and see if we resonate. And more often than not, we do, which means also down the line, as all the social justice comes into the forefront of our consciousness, when somebody steps in it, we can call each other out and we can do it in a respectful and loving way, but also with the boundaries firmly in place and say, you might want to reexamine what you just did. And I'm telling you this as a friend. And because we can tell each other these things as a friend, it's easier to have that conversation. So there's so many levels to it. There's so many different ways that we all resonate. And I'm beyond grateful that the pagan community was the place where I got to start singing and start giving concerts and really feel, okay, this is where I'm supposed to be. These are the people I'm meant to sing to. This is the work that I feel like I'm here to do. So many people never have anything like that much figured out, and it's I'm not, and that's not me putting anyone down, it's just reality. How many people do you know who have figured out what their dream is so that they can go after it? How many people are able to even get that far with, you know, taking privilege into account, but also just figuring out what you want to do is one of the hardest things. And I had it so easy with that as well. I knew as a tiny, tiny kid that I wanted to be on stage one way or another. And part of that's down to my family. But I think I have some pretty powerful guides coming from somewhere saying, yeah, boo, you're on the right track. And that happens all the time, especially when I feel down on myself and I'm exhausted. And the thought comes to my mind, maybe I should just quit. Immediately, every single time that has happened to me, what has happened immediately after is I get a text message, I get a phone call, someone in front of me says to me, please don't ever stop singing, we need you. And it's almost those exact words every single time. And if that ain't witchy, I don't know what is.
You know, the crazy thing is that I have had those same exact experiences with a lot of things, but really this show, you know, it just celebrated its, what is that, solar return? 10 years.
Just ooh, celebrated excellent.
10 years. And
well done you.
Do what?
I said, well done you.
Oh,
excellent.
And, you know, Pagan Podcast sort of had a heyday a few years ago. You know, when I started in 2009, it was just sort of like a cool thing. It was sort of like the next Zenga, the next Live Journal. Like lots of people started piling on to we could all do a podcast. And I feel like sort of we're all coming back around to that. Everybody's like, hey, I can do a podcast. I've got a microphone and a phone and there's an app for that now. But, you know, way back in the day, you know, there was a lot of voices and a lot of new stuff and a lot of people sort of very quickly filtered themselves out. But by like 2011, there was a really good core group of pagan podcasters from, you know, the US and Canada, and the UK. And they were really sort of starting to make a name for themselves. And I know that this show in particular did fairly well. I mean, you know, better than some, not as good as others. And, but it really like kind of reached a fever pitch where you're getting like tens of thousands of downloads, like per week and per episode or whatever. And, you know, yes. It reached this fever pitch in like 2016. And then like somebody tried to dox me and there was a weird stalking thing.
No.
Yeah. And then I basically had to take like a year off because it got nuts. Like somebody found my phone number and called me and it got real scary and it was insane. And you know,
oh my dear.
Yeah. I mean, it certainly knocked the show off the trajectory that it was on. And ever since I've come back, you know, taking a year away, other things started to become more of a priority, but, you know, every single time ever since I've, you know, come back, there have been some hiatuses here and there, but every time I think, you know, I think I don't have, I mean, gosh, I don't have anything else to say. I mean, I think I said it all. It's fine. Mm. What else do I have to put out there? There's an email or somebody will tweet
yep.
you or there's something where it's like, I just found you.
Oh.
And what's crazy is that, you know, 10 years in, people are just finding you and they're like, oh
yes,
my gosh,
yes.
I am going through your whole back catalog and I'm listening to everything. And I'm like, please don't.
Oh, good.
It's so bad. Can you start like 80 episodes in or something? Cause there were some rough, there was some growing pains. I was 20 and or 20, whatever. I was 20. I was a baby and I'd had a whole lot of growing that
be?
I needed to do. So could you,
who would we be without the growing pains though?
But,
who would we be without the growing
pains?
But no,
I mean, I've had those same experiences where it's like, you know, I think it's time to hang the pitchfork and the microphone up and I think I'm done. And then you get an email and then you get a thing and it's like, okay, I am never going to be the Joe Rogan of the pagan podcasting world. You know, I'm never going to get, you know, 10 million downloads an episode. And I get that because our community isn't that big to support it. But it's still worthwhile doing and it makes me happy. And there's at least one human being out there in, I guess, Australia who's still listening to it. So, you know, which is crazy to me. So I get that. Like, I get where the universe is like, no, I'm not done with you in this way quite yet.
Thank goodness that we are all as connected as we are, as much of a pain as that can be sometimes, but that we have the opportunity to reach out to others and say, you really helped me get through my day today or whatever. Your work inspired me. This one podcast episode inspired me. And now I have to go listen to all of them. People say to me, they say, I know you get this all the time. And they start to apologize. And I'm like, let me just tell everybody listening right now, please do not apologize for making me feel like I have a reason to be on this planet. You have no idea how important those moments and those interactions are, because the imposter syndrome is real.
Oh man.
And for most of us, it does not go away. So you are giving us ammunition and a way to survive the next time that it comes around when you share those things with us. It is a big deal. It may not feel important, but I am here to tell you that it is.
You were saying earlier, like, you always knew you wanted to be on a stage, and there is a bit, and I will say this as somebody who also puts themselves out there publicly, there's a bit of ego involved in trying, you know, and like putting yourself out there and like saying, buy my stuff or buy my whatever.
Yes.
So it's like, yes. I mean, there's at least some, as introverted as many of us can be, there's at least some little bit of ego there. So it's like, we never don't want compliments. you never have to apologize for that. You don't have to like bury it in caveats of like, I'm so sorry to take up your time, but I think you're cool. Like, you don't have to do that.
Yeah,
I'm good. You can tell me it's awesome.
Yeah, please tell me I'm awesome. Yeah, I know there are bound to be people that don't want to hear it or will roll their eyes. And if any of us have encountered someone like that, I'm so sorry. I hate that happened to you, and I hate that something so terrible happened to that person to make them roll their eyes when someone is telling them that they're amazing. That makes my little heart sad. But yeah, you never know where somebody's at on their journey.
Now, I will say the one thing that I don't like is the creepy comments. Like, I'm good with compliments on the work, and I'm good with the compliments.
There's a line,
is some stuff where it's like, you know, you put your podcast episode out there and it's like, ooh, I like the way you look in them jeans. I was like, I don't know why.
Thanks.
This is an audio format. Please stop.
Oh, God. At least they said something nice.
Sure.
I mean,
sure.
But that doesn't make stalking okay. That doesn't make stalking okay.
So I have to say that I, like, of all of the kinds of people that we could have had as the people putting out pagan music, I just feel so lucky that you're one of them, because...
Oh my gosh, thank you.
Okay, but like...
Wow.
You don't understand how in the 90s, like, that singer-songwriter girl was like... That was... Girl, you want to talk like slam poetry and sad singer-songwriter ladies from like... Canada or something. Like, that was like my jam. Like, give me some Alanis, give me some Jewel, give me some, you know, Annie DeFranco, give me some, you know, all of that business. And then like on the slam side, like, give me some Saul Williams, give me some Bo Sia, give me some, you know, give me all of this stuff. And then, you know, to discover that somebody is out there not only putting out music that is like, seriously, like, you could have walked into Maverick and gotten a deal, and I think we all know it, and I think you totally know it probably as well. Like, you could have been Alanis Morissette. Instead, you're making music for me specifically, and I think that's awesome. But, like, what made you say, this is my path? Like, was there, did you just know? Were you thinking, oh, well, this is a space I can fill? Like, how did you get into that?
Oh man, what a fun lead up to that question. I think you and I had a whole bunch of the same goodness coming into our little earballs as younger people, and I support that. So many folks who are so hella inspiring that my mind is still blown by some of the things that I found to listen to as a younger person. And I started off as a Beatles purist as a teenager. I went through this phase where I would not listen to anything but the Beatles. And what broke that open for me was the crack in the dam was Nine Inch Nails and Bowie and Alice in Chains. And so that they were my trifecta. It was like, okay, now there are things on the radio that I can hang with. And it was when Trent Reznor and David Bowie were hanging out together for that little bit in the mid-90s. And I went, wait, what now? Hold on a minute. I need it. Let me unwind my little britches and actually pay attention to this. And as a really little person, the first time I stepped out on a stage was with my family, and aww. so it felt like home. I didn't have stage fright until I was 30 years old. And you want to talk about getting blindsided by something that happens completely backwards, because most people have that as a lifelong thing. And I did not know how to deal with it when it happened to me for the first time as an adult, because I had always felt at home until the anxiety and the depression showed up. And I, there was a time when I didn't know what that was like. And I was honest with some of my friends about it. And they said, I hope that stays for you. I hope you get to keep that. And I did not get to keep that, but that means that I have new understanding for what so many of us go through, and I wouldn't trade it. I also, I also wouldn't trade the first meeting that I ever had with more of a mainstream record guy, because I played him Eulogy Song, which is a song on my very, very first CD that some of you may or may not know. That CD is about to have another anniversary, another birthday. And it's so that's coming up on March 27th. And that album is going to be the eldest of all of the ones that I have. But I played him a song that ended up on that. And I think I was 21 at the time. I think I might have been younger than that. But a friend of mine had gotten me a meeting with this guy. And it wasn't far, far away in mystical places like New York or anything like that. No. This was in Little Rock, okay? And when I say that Little Rock is all that we have in Arkansas that passes for a city, some of y'all will not believe me if you ever visit there, if you have not before. And I was there yesterday. I have, you know, it has a place in my heart. But when I go to Los Angeles, I understand that the cities that we have where I come from are not the cities that other people think of when they hear that word. When they hear the word city, Little Rock is not what they're thinking of. So here I am with this guy. I play him the hottest thing that I have in my little teeny tiny baby singer-songwriter arsenal at the time. And he listens very respectfully. And then the first words out of his mouth when I am finished are, "That was really good. Can you play any covers?" And my heart sank, because that was his reaction. That was, how can I sell you by asking you to play stuff that other people have already heard however many times? And and I have learned that if I put other people's work or other people's dreams ahead of my own, even when I'm collaborating with my friends, I have to be really, really careful about this. If I do it too many times, the source or deity or whatever you think of it as is going to come after me and going to remind me that I have a mission, and that mission is to make sure that the things that I am the showerhead for, the things that I am the channel for, get heard and get shared. And I didn't actually know that I wanted to combine my music and my magical practice until I'd been studying witchy things for a few years, and I thought it was going to be something completely else. But there I am, driving between the day job at the time, which sucked, and we're not even going to discuss that, and the recording session that I had for that first CD that I mentioned earlier. This was 2003. I'm driving along on the 240 loop in Memphis, Tennessee, which is where I lived at the time and where I was based for a long, long while. I'm headed to the recording studio and turn on NPR as you do, and the Earth and Sky segment comes on, and they start talking about new data that has come down from the scientists at Cambridge about a black hole in the Perseus galaxy and how they have measured the frequency and pitch that black hole has been putting off, and the pitch was B flat. And B flat on a piano, folks, is the black key that is just to the left of middle C. So if you're not sure about anything that I just described, go have someone show you where middle C's at. And then the black key just to the left is B flat. And so knowing that there was something out beyond Earth that could be described, that it was doing something that could be described in Western musical terms, made me so excited I almost drove off the road. And that right there was all the proof I needed that it is not much of a stretch to say that music is part of everything, and therefore that all of the feelings that I'd been having in my gut, in my heart, or whatever, that there was something that I could tap into to be effective, to help others as a healer, as a performer, as an entertainer, whatever, all of the above. That was all of the proof that I needed that I could combine the two. And I literally had not had any idea that it was even possible before that day. And so I kind of, that was the seed of it. That was before I figured out how to drive around the country and have my job be to play for my friends. But after I went to the first witchy festival of any great size that same year, I came home and I did a little spell at my desk at the awful day job. And what I wrote down was, I wish that my job could be, instead of this, driving around the country and singing for my friends. And then I began to take the steps to make sure that that spell would work. And it did. I think I would have exploded if it hadn't. I have heard other full-time musicians say, and around that same time, I heard someone say to me, this job is terrifically hard. Please don't do it unless you have to do it, unless you have to play music to feed your own soul. Don't go there because it's going to make you sad. It's going to break your heart and all these other things. And I know that that is true for so many people. But finding out also another aspect of it, that I could be myself, that I could be a woman with a guitar and sing decent pagan music. The person who gave me that realization was Darwin Prophet, who is based in Texas. She's another witchy performer and one of a crew of witchy women performers that I met from Texas. And among them are also Ginger Doss and Linda Millard. And those three women have been so inspiring to me since I met them. But Darwin was the first one that I met and the first one that I heard. And that was in 2002 at an event called Dragon Dance at a festival location called Wovenwold. And I'm still buddies with the people who put events on there to this day. And I saw Darwin on that stage and I heard her sing. I heard her play her electric guitar. She has a really impressive vocal range. And I thought, wow, I can sing for this community and sound really good and sound like me. And it was meeting Darwin that really opened the path as I see it today and as I can trace it all the way back to there. I was like, okay, yeah, this is a thing that I can do, because I wasn't sure up to that point. But that was also the first event that I played for an audience who were mostly skyclad at the time. So I never have to imagine the crowd in their underwear.
I was about to say, so when you were when you're doing the stage fright thing of picture everybody in their underwear, you didn't even have that to picture.
Nope, I don't even need it. I just go back to that memory of that.
Or are you thinking, okay, picture everybody in normcore. Like, I want white New Balances and like acid wash waist high jeans.
Oh my god. But it's so much more fun to imagine everybody in sort of their fey aspect, because that's my safe place, right? Is playing for witchy crowds and people like the crowds at Fairy Worlds where I used to perform, who are all decked out in how they want to look on the outside all the time. Right? They're not having to hide a damn thing. And those are the crowds that I love best. And that's why I play so many festivals. And lately, lots and lots of online shows, which means that the stage fright factor is all on my own anxiety, having to watch myself on the screen on my devices that are running the tech instead of watching people's faces. So it's a weird dynamic. And everybody who does any kind of streaming will understand what I'm talking about. It's really strange when you're used to playing for a live crowd, but it's been so rewarding and so helpful in getting through the winter and making sure that the bills stay paid, while also not having to tour when the weather is dicey and when it's flu season and stuff like that. So I know I shifted gears a little bit there, but
no, actually I was about to ask you. So, I mean, everybody sort of defines success in their thing differently. What was like the first indicator of, I am successful at this? Like, what is your, you know, what was the first wake up call that like, I am a successful musician. I am officially successful. You know, I have succeeded.
Well, since Senpai has noticed me, there were the flagstones have sort of been fallen right in line in front of me for a very long time. Since that event in 2002, just about, is how it felt. and just continuing to reach out to festivals. And then there came a point where festivals were reaching out to me. And that was such a gift. And I don't remember quite when it happened, but the very first time that I played an event called Heartland Pagan Festival at Camp Gaia, which is in western Kansas, where the green part is, where the trees are, I played their talent show. And they still, as far as I know, they still have a talent show at that festival for the whole community to participate in. Whoever's there, whatever you want to do, just sign up and you'll get time at the microphone. I went and I performed at that open mic effectively the first year that I was there. And they hired me to perform on the main stage the following year on the spot. And that made me feel like I was doing it right, because these were the people whose respect I wanted. This was the community that I wanted to sing for. It always has been, because since that event in 2002, I'd been looking into, okay, how much time can I steal away to go travel and find other events like this? How can I find more of my people? Because that was one of the things that the music conferences that I went to, large and small, back around that time when I was trying to figure out, okay, how do I learn how to do this? Because the entire music industry is changing right now. The best way that I can figure out what I need to do for my own way that I'm going to do what I'm going to do is to go learn from people who are doing the same thing. So I went to all the music conferences that I could afford to find, which were not that many, but they emphasized going where your audience is. And that was so smart. And one of the examples that they used for booking and thinking outside of the box were Lords of Acid, and how they would go and perform at kink events, I believe, if I'm remembering correctly what the presentation was. And I was like, okay, yeah, that's definitely making sure that you're very specific in places that you book, and more power to them. I have played at a couple of kink events myself now, and I can tell you that everyone that I've ever encountered in any niche community is just thrilled to have you there and thrilled to have music that they'll resonate with. And that is the bottom line. If you can give people a memory that makes them smile later on, they're coming and they're putting their emotional well-being into your hands. And if you go there with them, when you make mistakes, you're showing vulnerability, you're showing that you've put yourself into their hands as well. And I got the opportunity to do that after the Widgie community had immediately said, very first festival I performed at in 02, and then again at that open mic in 03, and then my very first festival main stage in 04, when the whole community, it felt like, rose up and said to me, you are ours, and we love you, and we are going to love you as long as we can, as long as we're all together. We are going to continue to love you and lift you up. And that has not changed in all this time. As all of the changes that the community goes through, that sub-communities go through, that the whole witchy world is trying to go to at this point and figure out how we can continue to walk ethically and respectfully and without appropriating all kinds of shit here and there that doesn't belong to us, I still get feedback from folks, and not just witchy folks, but of course there's a lot of fandom crossover in the people who listen to what I do, and I love fanish events as well. That support has always been there, and it feels like I have an endless well of support, and it's okay for me to continue to grow however it feels right for me to grow as a songwriter, as a producer, as a performer. And that y'all are going to tell me if it's no good, because you've been sweet enough to tell me when it is good all this time since I went ahead and left the day job and went on the road in 2004. That's how long it has been. And the support has been so consistent, and that it's given me the space to figure out things like, okay, how do I make my digital distribution happen? How do I combine the mundane with the magical so that I have some numbers in my bank account that are not a zero?
Mm.
You have some big numbers
in front of a lot of zeros.
That would be okay too. Some people are going to measure their success by how much money and power, and I'm not one of those people, but the lights are still on, and I've still been able to feed my family. And what more bottom line could you wish for than that? Except for that, all the support coming in that I mentioned. And so getting brave about stuff like Patreon has been another direct result of all that. I say, okay, if I put stuff out here, the witches are going to find it. Because the witchy community is really tenacious about that kind of thing. And I'm grateful for that too. And so I've been working on the next intentionally witchy full-length music release for a long, long time. There's stuff that's going to be on here that I've been working on since 2011. And I'm devastated that it's taken me this long, but I've still been able to put content out pretty regularly.
Well, now I'm devastated that it's taken this long, because gimme, gimme.
yes, my friend, I promise you. Fortunately now, there's stuff like Spotify, and I can give treats one at a time if I'm impatient. And I'm like, no, people need to hear this song right now. I did that with one of my more overtly political tunes that's come along recently, because you can't help it recently now, can you? So I have a single out called Roses in the Rocks, and that's all about that's my resist song, that's my persist song. It's also my pride song, and I managed to write it on the last day of Pride Month a couple of years ago, and it's out there now, and I didn't have to wait until I had an album project ready to release that, because we have all of these other music options through social media, through the internet. The whole zeitgeist of the internet has given me so much leeway as well. And so just this incredible braided knotwork of the witchy community and the internet and the shift that happened in the industry when I was figuring out what my first steps needed to be, all of that braided together and ending up performing live at festivals when I was younger and having people say, you're doing it right, please do more immediately, right out of the gate. All that braided together is at my core. It's at the foundation of everything that I do. So even when I'm doing something seemingly random, like producing an audiobook, I've still got my working altar set up in the studio right next to where the control desk is and stuff like that. I'm still working magic, even when it doesn't sound on the face of it like I am. And so knowing all of that, I can promise you that, that I'm doing everything that I can to make the next thing that will sound witchy on the outside as next level as I possibly can, as authentic as I can, and as packed full of all the magic I can fit in it as possible.
So the pagan world, the pagan media world in general, isn't isn't very formal. It isn't very organized. It's a lot of people. It's a few people in each kind of thing that just, to use the word that you just used, are just tenacious enough to keep going. I mean, even sort of, I guess the biggest pagan media creator of any kind is probably Llewellyn. And there's not a rich Llewellyn author out there. There's just not.
No.
I mean, there's not a rich Llewellyn author. I don't care how many of their books they've released. I don't care how many people know their name. There's not a single solitary rich Llewellyn author out there. Nobody out there is making crazy big money off of pagan media. But if you're not a pagan author, I mean, even if you're a pagan author, but if you're not a pagan author and you're still making pagan content, pagan media, there's not really a lot of signposts, guideposts, how to, I mean, there's no pagan record company. There's no pagan, cable channel. There's no, any of that kind of thing. I mean, unless you're putting out a book that fits the needs of the business of one of the handful of pagan publishers, it's sort of difficult to figure out what a first step, a 10th step, a 22nd step all look like. So if the next SJ is listening to this, if the next Kellyanna or the next Wendy Rule or the next Gaia Consort or the next Tricky Pixie Group or the next Dragon Ritual Drummers, I mean, let's just say all the throwbacks. If the next person out is out there listening and is like, I've got good stuff. But it's difficult to find an audience. What are your, I mean, do you have advice? Is it just like, I don't know, hopefully lightning strikes you too?
Well, I pass on what singer-songwriters told me when I was in college, and I brazenly would step up to ask them, how do you get to the point that you're at? How do I end up doing what you do? Mm-hmm. Go find people. Go share with as many people as you can stand. Go post things. And I don't know, we're all shouting into the void with all of the portals through which we have to post things these days. But keep at it until you find your people. That is how it was for me. And it is way easier nowadays, I feel, because of how connected we all are, to find your people, even than it was for me. And it felt effortless for me. So I think it must be easier now. I would hope that it is easier now to find people who will enjoy what you're doing. There's bound to be someone. And also, don't feel like you have to go find people to enjoy what you're doing. If you're doing it for yourself, that is just as valid. If it is a thing that makes you happy and you have no designs on outside success or approval, that is every bit as valid. I think on the Tumblr was where I saw someone say it didn't always have to be that we had to try to be the best at things. It wasn't always like this, where there was this pleasure to hone the skills that you have until you are the best whoever was, otherwise you don't count. That was not always the reality that we lived in. Those were not always the pressures that we lived with and dealt with. And I think about that sometimes because I am hella driven, if that's not obvious. I am super driven. My work ethic is very healthy, which has made parenting a little bit bittersweet, as I have to sometimes talk myself out of my tree because I have a window every day, thanks to my in-laws, who are fabulous grandparents. Let me tell you, if you're not seeing enough baby pictures from me, just follow my father-in-law on Facebook. He will hook you up. Because of them, I have a work window every single day of the week, but that is all I have. So I have to choose usually one thing. I have to choose one task that I can get done that day, and that's all I get. That's all I'm allowed to have. And I know that if we didn't have the societal expectation that the end goal should be to, if you are talented, hone your talents until other people hear about you and decide that you are one of the best. So, yeah, I think about what life would be like if we didn't have that in place. But at the same time, I resonate with it up to a point. I harmonize with it because I want to be someone whose work continues to help others. But that's sort of my main goal, not to be considered the best, but more like to be said of by people I respect, wow, she's really got her shit together. Instead of, wow, she's the next Beyonce. There is already a Beyonce. She is doing a fabulous job of being Beyonce. None of us, that means that none of us has to try to be her.
Oh,
she's got that down.
I love that permission slip. You don't, she's doing a great job being her. You're not needed to fill that particular role. You get to be you.
Yeah.
That is such a brilliant permission slip for people, because I think, I mean, you know, to echo what you were saying, I think that so often, it is a whole lot easier to sort of find a tribe these days because of social media, because of the internet. I mean, because of all the different crazy mad meannesses of the internet, of the ways in which we have for good or for ill, become so interconnected. And it is so much easier to find a tribe of people and the 7 billion plus people on the earth. But the flip side of that is the toxic piece of that is, if there's a thing you're good at, or if there's a thing you just sort of like, and there's a thing that you really enjoy doing, and you put it out there, you know, or you're like, gosh, you know, I like this thing, and I kind of want to be part of the community of people that are putting out this thing. the expectation then is that you have to like commodify your passions.
Yes.
And once you start commodifying your passions, oh my gosh, I mean, imposter syndrome takes over, but then this like madness takes over of becoming hypercritical of this thing that you liked. And all of a sudden, everything that you liked about it is just, am I doing enough of the stuff that's going to make money? Am I putting out the kind of things that make money? I mean, you know, I started putting my art online, you know, years ago, and the stuff that I really liked doing, you know, I would put art up for sale, and like the stuff that I really enjoyed and the stuff that I liked doing didn't really sell. But then like other stuff that like I didn't personally enjoy as much in the creation process, I didn't feel very connected to it, but like it sold, and it sold for a lot of money, and it was great. But I didn't love it. Right. And so, I mean, the problem is like, and then you put out a bunch of work that you just kind of hate because you're chasing this dream, or, you know, just chasing this expectation, I guess, that, oh, I'm going to be this kind of artist now, and I'm going to start making money off this. And maybe this is a career, you know, maybe this is a thing. And I think it's such a permission slip that we need to start giving ourselves, that it's okay to just have passions. And it's okay even to have passions that turn into hobbies. And it's okay to have hobbies that sometimes make you a little money. I mean, it's okay to take a long weekend and go play a show somewhere and make a little money off of that and sell some t-shirts and maybe sell some self-produced albums or self-produced books or whatever, and then go back to a day job on Monday. It's okay. Yes. That is totally valid, and that's totally fine. And you do not need to be bigger than that.
Yeah, and you can be YouTube famous without having to be YouTube famous. Though I am not YouTube famous as far as I know. So if people who know more about this than me, feel free to correct me on that, because I know that's got to take a ton of work. I am very proud of my 4,000 followers or so, my 4,000 YouTube subscribers. We're good. And that made me think of something that I wanted to ask you to speak to potentially, and you don't have to, but this is something that I have no experience with. And the last question brought it back into my mind. The other thing that we are in danger of with putting our stuff out there sometimes, and this is something that I just flat out don't have as much experience with to advise the next whomever about, is that people will just be freaking mean online and tell you to kill yourself. The trolls come along, and I have had very, very little of that. I'm not important enough to be doxxed, and that's okay. If the day were to come, I have more at stake now than I used to. I have a son now. I have a family now. I obviously have work that I care about, but It's not been under threat from that kind of trolling and that kind of malice. And you mentioned getting doxxed earlier. Mm. And at this point, the best I could probably offer someone is a hug and say that this too shall pass and time heals is so inadequate to someone who is in that moment and in that danger and in that situation. If those things are not helpful to hear, then I will not offer them. But if they are, I hope that they would still turn out to be true for people who are in that situation. And I just don't have any experience with it because it has not happened to me. Knock on wood. And I wish it didn't happen.
Well,
to anybody.
Don't ever make anybody mad on the internet. And with a show called Inciting a Riot, it's
maybe a foregone conclusion. The doxers are coming for me now.
I mean, the whole point of the show for a very, very, very long time was to poke at convention and to poke at, you know, the kinds of things that we just sort of accepted and the ways that we did things that we just sort of accepted and the ways that the pagan community just sort of accepted status quos and, you know, the kinds of information that we just kept passing around because that's what we'd done for the last 30 years. So it, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And all of that kind of thing. And, you know, I remember listening to shows, to pagan podcasts, you know, like in 2006 and 7 and 8, you know, a few years before I did my show. And, you know, you would hear the cool stuff. I mean, you know, a pagan podcast used to be 30 minutes, and it was, let's talk about the stone of the week, and we're going to get that from the Scott Cunningham book, and let's talk about the herb of the week, and we're probably also going to get that from the Scott Cunningham book, and then let's either talk about some pagan history for 5 minutes, or let's do a spell for five minutes, or, you know, let's do some kind of witchy something for 5 minutes. And that used to be what a pagan podcast was. A pagan podcast was just sort of like a, let's do a, I mean, I hate to bring it up as though it's like a negative, but like, we all know what Llewellyn kind of put out there for about the late 90s to early 2000s.
Yes.
We all know
yes.
the kind of books they put out there for a while. So
Yes, indeed. You know, we were all there together.
We're all better now. We all know what those days were. So I'm just saying, like, it all felt very much just like a basic 2001 Llewellyn book for a while, like for, you know, several years, just because people didn't, I mean, mostly because people were just literally reading out of the nearest Llewellyn book and they didn't know what else to do. And, you know, then that passed for a pagan podcast. And every now and then I would hear a pagan podcast that like would wander onto a real topic.
Aha.
And, you know, I remember, you know, some shows that are still around would kind of talk about, oh, let's talk about the Burning Times. And then they would kind of talk about it and then immediately like run away. You know, let's talk about what happens at festivals, and let's talk about maybe some of the misogyny in the pagan community. Oh, let's talk. But it was, we're not even going to dip our toe in the water. We're going to look at the water through a telescope across town while eating lunch inside of an air-conditioned building with a single window. Like, you know, that's how far we're gonna get from actually getting into the realness of this particular topic. And I was listening to those kinds of things, and every now and then I would get really excited because I'm like, okay, this is the stuff that I'm looking for. And, you know, and one of the things that when you're a public pagan, what do you get emails about? Well, what's the 201 book? I've read the 101 book. What's the 201 stuff? What's the 301? You know, how do I get beyond just reading the fluffy 101 stuff? And I love fluffy. Boy, howdy, give me fluff. And I, you know, my friends and I talk about all the time. I'm like, we're now kind of starting to become the older pagans.
I know, and I'm thinking,
gosh, you know, oh, we all started as fluff, and then we ran away from fluff as hard as we could, and fluff is the worst thing that we could ever be called. And now I'm like, I miss fluff. I miss when things were magical, and I miss when things were mysterious, and I miss not feeling like, you know, oh gosh, that's old hat. But anyways, I digress. You know, so I was really excited when I would hear podcasters talk about stuff that felt like 201 material, you know, the advanced stuff, being part of a culture instead of just sort of being part of a book club. And, but they never really got into it. So I was like, okay, well, somebody needs to have these kinds of conversations. So I did.
Yes.
So I put it out there, and it made a lot of people happy, and it made even more people mad. But either way, people were listening. And it created conversations. And whether or not you agreed with the points that I was making or the research that I had done, whether you agreed with it, whether you hated it, whether you hated me, whether you thought I was a sarcastic know-it-all asshole, it got people having a conversation, but it did make a lot of people mad, which is, I guess, how you create conversations sometimes. Sometimes you have to make people mad enough that they start talking.
Yes.
And that's the way the show operated for the first, like, you know, 5-6, really, until I guess I got doxxed to cut a year taken out of my sales.
And had to take a break.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, and I grew up a little bit, and some priorities shifted and the tone shifted, and, you know, it's become the show that it is. I'm very happy with where it is. But I also don't have good advice there. I mean, how do you survive it? I mean, what I did, I hunkered down and I turned, I mean, you know, all of the firelight, social media kind of went dark for the most part for like a year. And, you know, I tried to, Facebook's real name policy was biting me in the butt. And there was a lot of just sort of, well, what do I, you know, how do I put myself out there? How do I get the show out there? You know, I don't know. I mean, I don't know that I have great advice for people, just because I think everybody just has to handle it. I'm so sorry.
It's all right. Big feelings.
Go, Ben.
Sorry.
No worries. No worries. Puppy's gonna do what puppy's gonna do.
So, you know, I don't know that I have a great a great
soundbite
kit. I don't know that I have a great toolkit for what to do whenever angry people on the internet come for you. Have a really good sense of humor. Have a good support system, and just like anything else, it's realize that it's a whole lot less about you than it is about them. But the problem is, it's hard to tell you. I mean, it's hard to believe that in the moment because it does feel so personal. It feels so personal because everything that you've ever put out there about yourself, I mean, you know, the more that you put yourself out there, the more that people want to know about you, and the way to set yourself apart from other podcasters or other pagan media people is to let people in, is to show people, you know, this is my altar. This is my thing, you know, and the more that you show, I mean, for the first several years, my actual face wasn't visible at all. Like there was like this cartoon character that sort of looked like me that I used. And, you know, but like the minute you show a picture, it becomes a bullet in someone else's gun, you know, because then they can, if somebody really wants to, they can, they'll figure out where you are based on the photo that you took, you know, the people figured out where I worked based on like a picture that I took in my back room one time of my office. And it was nuts. It's nuts. So, I mean, be smart. I have no good advice because the problem is you can't anticipate it. All you can do is hope that there are enough good people out there that are not willing to buy into it, are not willing to look at the stuff, are not willing to participate in it, and are supportive of shutting it down as quickly as possible. And you also have to get real lucky that places like Facebook will eventually, you know, give you your social media back and that kind of thing, which I was lucky. It took a year, but I eventually got it all back. So
you answered that very, very well.
Did I?
You answered that very, very well. I think you did. And you helped me. You helped me think of something useful to say also. So it's totally, totally worth it. There's a big piece that I think we could get into about trusting yourself. And yes, listen to people who would give you advice, who have your growth at heart, but don't necessarily listen to the people that are like, oh, you're going to get discovered any day now, or, you know, just keep at it. Someone's going to just let me know when you're ready to take your work to the next level.
Well, someone
even said that to me recently, and I'm like, wow, you really are not on the wavelength, honey.
Mostly because like that is such, I mean, because that keeps you in the mindset of where I am isn't good enough.
Yeah. And
but
that's
you're
the
never
old system talking.
I mean,
you don't need
think
that. You don't need that cassette tape. You
it doesn't
recycle
matter
that now.
Who you are. I mean, think of Beyonce. I mean, you know, you brought Beyonce up earlier. Beyonce's actual music career has had just as many hills and valleys as just about anybody else's music career.
Yes.
And the definition of her success, I mean, if you just measure her success in album sales, she's big, but she's by no stretch of the imagination like the biggest female music star. She's certainly not the biggest music star, period. Not even of like the last 10 years. Mm. I mean, she's just not. But the deference that the music world has for her is because of the artistry that she has. I mean, if you just base it on sales numbers, if you just base it on views, if you base it on, you know, if you base it on a number, if you boil people down to a number, then nobody's Beyonce. Beyonce's not Beyonce. I mean, she's not.
That's well put, too. Yeah.
I mean, when you boil anybody down to a number, the idea that you have of them very quickly dissolves. And
yes,
it's That's why that imposter syndrome, that's why that, you know, I need to commodify my passion is such a demon. It's such a lie because it's impossible to ever get to that imaginary standard that you have for yourself. It's impossible because even the people that you admire are not there.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's a whole other level of
it is
of
a the, whole of the ephemeral other
and the and the sort of presentation of and oh gosh, public persona. Those were the words I was looking
right
for. That's but yeah, just bring it back to if you're not feeling as authentic as you want to feel in your journey, bring it back to what does feel authentic.
Absolutely.
Bring it back and trust yourself in that way. And allow yourself to let your authenticity speak, even if it isn't what someone else says is best for you, even if it means that you're going to shift away from doing the thing that people have responded to previously as what people love best or what they've told you that they love best. If that is not what your instinct is pulling you toward, give your instinct a chance. Hand the microphone over to it and see what happens. The worst you can do is have to come back and try something else after you give that a shot. And at least you can say that you listened to your own self and you gave yourself the benefit of the doubt. You gave yourself some trust instead of denying what may have been the spark that you needed most at the time. Does that make sense?
It makes a ton of sense.
Okay, good.
SJ Tucker, we have spent the last hour together, and I am so grateful and so happy, and I could talk to you all afternoon.
Well, but, I would be honored to talk to you again for sure.
Oh my gosh.
You just let me know.
Well,
just let me know.
100%. Consider the invitation open. We'll find another time to do a follow-up conversation.
We'll incite some more riots.
We will incite, girl, I can.
Hella riots.
I can riot at any. I can riot at the drop of a hat. Right now, I am about to go with a very dear friend to go get some milkshakes and celebrate the fact that I just put a new book out this week. So I'm real thrilled.
Yes, you did. Congratulations.
Thank
Happy
you
book
so
days.
Much. Thank you
Happy
so much.
Happy book days.
So SJ Tucker, when people listen to this show and they think, oh my gosh, I need to listen to SJ Tucker's music immediately. I need to find all of her things. Where is the best place to send those folks?
Well, check on the Spotify, check on the iTunes, check on the Amazon Music and all the places that you love best. I am there. I will be there for you. The landing place for the social media and the content that I have direct control over is sjtucker.com, and the place to listen to all of the stuff that I have that hasn't even necessarily made it to Spotify yet is music.sjtucker.com. Everyone is welcome. I am not including Nazis in that statement. Nazis are not welcome.
Everyone except Nazis.
I will punch you. I will punch you, and my people will also punch you, so prepare to get punched. Let's see. If you want to find social media stuff, I should confess, I am now, as of this recording, 24 hours a TikTok user. I have no idea what I'm doing.
Oh gosh.
I'm on there as SJ Tucker Music. I'm on a lot of other places as SJ Tucker Music as well. Twitter's a little different, but I'm easier to find there. So
see,
no
I know one of the hallmarks of getting older is that as a new social media thing comes out and it becomes big, when it becomes big and you look at it and you just think, I don't need that. I don't need to learn a new thing. I'm good. Like, I feel like, I mean, like that's one of the hallmarks of adulthood is when a new thing comes out and it becomes a thing that everybody has. And you look at it and you're just like, I don't need it. I don't want it. I don't need to learn it. It's new. And like, I say that and 6 months from now, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to have 1,000 tickers. I'll tick and I'll talk.
I'm going to be ticking and talking all over the place.
I'm going to tick and talk. All right, Miss SJ Tucker, thank you so much for your time. I swear that we will do a follow-up because, I mean, we haven't even scratched the surface of our conversation yet. I mean, we are still in, like, 1995 in this conversation. I love this. So
Before you go to Milkshake Land,
yes.
Let me just say that I'm mentioning online concerts when we first got into this, I think. HTTP colon slash slash online concerts. concertthing.com. It is a new streaming platform run by grassroots musicians for grassroots musicians. It is so new. We are still getting the code to act right. But I have had some really, really great show experiences so far on there since last October when we did the soft launch of it. And I've got two shows in March on there, one in the evening and one in the afternoon, and more to come.
Did you say that was hgtv.com?
No, sorry. HTTP, /// without the W.
Oh, HTTP. I was like, I heard you say that and I was like, HGTV has an online concert thing? Okay, so it's online concert thing.
Yes, online concert thing.
Okay, good. I'm making my notes now. Well, Miss S.J. Tucker, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. You have a good rest of your day. Thank you. I'm trying really hard not to fangirl over here.
You can. I am here for you. Don't even feel ashamed. There's no shame here.
Well, folks, that's going to just about do it for this episode of Inciting a Riot. I want to thank my guest, S.J. Tucker, for spending a little bit of her time with me. I promise not to fangirl so hard next time. Folks, once again, I just want to offer, if you or someone you love are experiencing some of the financial, economic effects of the coronavirus, of COVID-19, if you've lost a job, if you have a loss of income, if you know you get your event, you get your income from, you know, the gig economy, something like that, please use me as a resource. I would be happy to try to elevate any GoFundMes or other fundraising efforts. If you've got a special charity that you think needs a shout out, please feel free to reach out to me for those kinds of things. I am very happy to use what little platform I have to try to elevate others in this time of need. If you know of somebody doing good work, if you know of programs that are getting masks out to people in different kinds of areas, I would be happy to promote those for you. So email me firelight, firelyte, at incitingariot.com. You can also tweet me at incitingariot. I'm pretty much at incitingariot most everywhere, except for the weird, you know, social media apps. I don't tick or talk. I don't know. I'm not as cool as SJ Tucker. I don't tick or talk. Maybe I will. Maybe I'll get really, really bored being at home. I've been at home for a really long time now. This interview was recorded a while back, and I've been sitting at home for quite a while now, so I'm getting a little stir crazy. Anyways, one cool thing. Velma, my dear friend Velma Nightshade, who I do Inciting a Brouhaha with, our our semi-annual podcast, we were doing a quarantine chat this last weekend. So look on social media, because it had a pretty good turnout, and a lot of folks wrote in and said, oh my gosh, I missed it. When's it going to happen again? I don't know when it's going to happen again, but it was a pretty fun thing. And we called it a quarantine chat just because it was a bunch of people on Skype getting together to vent and talk and just have what little social contact we can have right now. So if you'd like to be a part of the next one, it's just a free fun thing on Skype. I'll put the link up on Facebook and Twitter. So make sure you're following both me on Facebook and me on Twitter, or either one of the two, so that you can see when the next thing is. It's just a fun chance to get together with folks who are also living that quarantine life and vent and you know, I don't know, talk about the toilet paper shortage. other than that, I just wish all of you a very safe and happy time right now. I know that it is a difficult time, but we are going to get through this. It is not the pandemic to end all of humanity. It is a very difficult time. It is certainly a time of uncertainty and a lot of fear and anxiety for many people, but we are going to get through this. So I hope that whatever self-care you need to do to get through it, whatever you need to get through it, please do that. I want to see all of you on the other side of this. So stay indoors, stay away from people who are immunocompromised, the elderly, the very young. Please, if you can avoid going out to non-essential services, please avoid that. Now is not the time to go to the beach. I know that those, I was getting my email this morning. I know those $39 airline fares look really attractive, but it is not worth it. You do not need to go to Mykonos over lunch just because the airline is giving you pretty much free airfare. So, you know, the airlines are going to be fine. And if they're not, I'm sure some bailout's going to come for them. You don't need to worry about them. Your money's fine with you. Take care of you. Take care of your loved ones. Stay indoors. You know, if you want to go for a walk, go for a nice walk in the park or down an uncrowded street. Stay 6 feet away from each other. Wash your hands with soap and water. Sing some happy birthday to yourself. Whatever you need to do to stay healthy and stay sane during this time. I will stop rambling now because I'm sure it's not helping. Anyways, I'm going to leave you. But as always, I will leave you with love and light, firelight.